We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area.com. Introducing your host, San Francisco 49ers Insider, Matt Maiocco.
This is the 49ers Insider Podcast brought to you by Big O Tires. And in a little bit, we're going to talk to Bryant Young, a 49ers legend and a semifinalist for the first time as a modern era candidate for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But first, of course, it's Laura Britt. Laura, how are you doing?
I'm great. I feel like I still know this 49ers team, even after the loss, something they're not used to this season. But I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. So we will make this painless.
I was hoping it would be as painful as possible.
Oh, really? Just soak it all in.
Yeah. Just trying to, you know, live the true 49ers feeling, because they have 24 hours for a win and 24 hours to mope on a loss. And I guess we have 24 hours to mope on their loss, too.
We can just react any way we want to, because unlike the 49ers, we don't have to get back to work and prepare for a game. We can just talk about what happened.
Well, some of us do.
Well, I guess. I suppose that's true. But
that's what we're going to do today, right?
We talk about
the game.
We will talk about the game, and we'll talk about the upcoming game. And what you just said, I think, you know, moral victories. No, it wasn't a moral victory. But in my mind, man, I was impressed by both of those teams. And I thought the 49ers, I thought they played pretty well, but there were clearly some things that they need to clean up. But I might be more impressed right now with them than I've been at any point this season. And I am 100% certain that this team has what it takes to go as far as a NFL team can go.
Yeah, I agree. Hearing the guys speak after the game, they all seemed to have that positive attitude. And we've talked about that, I think, the past couple weeks on the podcast, just about how last season in 2018, even though they were losing, they still had a great outlook, almost like they knew what they had and what they were building, that it was going to end up paying off. The way they carry themselves after a loss was not, they weren't disappointed in the product that they put out on the field. Yes, you can always correct mistakes, and they're definitely going to do that this week, but they weren't disappointed in how well they played the Ravens. I went back and was looking at some of the scores over the past couple weeks, few weeks that the Ravens have had. They, before this past game against the Niners, they scored 45 on the Rams, 41 on the Texans, 49 on the Bengals, 37 on the Patriots, 30 on the Seahawks. Shall I keep going?
I think we got the point.
The fact that the 49ers held them to 20 points says a lot about how good this defense is, because if they can put up 37 on the Patriots, that should tell you something about where it's kind of a gauge to show you how good the 49ers defense is. And it really came down to running out of time. You know, this game and the other game that they lost against the Seahawks a few weeks back both came down to field goals. Those were both 3-point games against two very good football teams.
Yeah, in games where the 49ers missed field goals too.
Yeah,
so
true.
You know, they have to clean up some stuff on special teams. The atmosphere in the locker room was a lot different after this game than it was against Seattle. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I really think that kind of the down attitude that everybody had in the locker room after the game had a lot to do with Ronald Blair's injury and not necessarily the outcome of that loss right. against Seattle. But everybody was as upbeat as you could expect them to be after a loss. It was a painful loss for them because they had their opportunities. One of the things that to me stood out was how as the game went on, it looked like the defense had a pretty good handle on the Ravens offense. And yes. you know they're
so good at making adjustments.
Yeah, that was very impressive. Now, the game was also played in a sideways rain and it was very cold, so I'm sure the weather conditions had something to do with it. I thought the 49ers plan was very solid defensively in what they were able to do against Lamar Jackson. And this is after a game in which Lamar Jackson rushed for 100 yards, but I just don't know that the Ravens can continue to do this on a week-in, week-out basis, subjecting their quarterback to so many hits.
We've seen it happen too many times. With Cam Newton, you look at guys that, I mean, and he's a big dude, but look where he is now. He's suffered with so many injuries because he takes the hits, he'll give the hits. Here in San Francisco, I was watching the game with Dante and Ian, and that's just a consistent theme that they kept bringing up. They said, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And you certainly hope that does not happen, especially for a guy that's playing at the level that he is. It's really fun, exciting football to watch Lamar Jackson play, but he's putting his body on the line a lot. And this is a very physical team. You've got guys like Nick Bosa and on that are seeking him out. That's what they get paid to do. And when you're putting your body on the line that much as a quarterback, it just gets dangerous. And Richard Sherman spoke about that a little bit in his postgame presser. He talked about the fact where it gets a little dicey as far as defensive players because of all the restrictions that are on defensive players now when they're after the quarterback. You know, they have a lot more restrictions on them now in order to protect the quarterback. But when a quarterback is going to make a 15-yard play running, then you have to step up and do something as a defensive player. So the lines kind of get a little gray there too.
Yeah, right. I mean, if they don't go in with the intention of tackling him, Lamar Jackson is going to make them pay by either running over them or making a cut inside and picking up more yards. So the Ravens were complaining, John Harbaugh was complaining about the number of hits on Lamar Jackson. I think that's kind of passing the buck because it starts with the Ravens' offensive approach. And if you're going to have your quarterback running between the tackles, if you're going to have your quarterback getting outside and running toward the sideline, he better step out of bounds and not try to pick up those extra yards. Or if you have him running between the tackles, that hole better be wide open before he slides. Otherwise, he's going to get hit. That is the name of the game, and the 49ers defense or any defense that the Ravens face throughout this season and into next season and however long Lamar Jackson's the quarterback, their job is to hit him and tackle him and make sure he doesn't get those extra yards.
Yeah, and I think to your point a little bit ago that you said, it really did seem like the Niners defense made great adjustments at the half. And they were able to slow him down significantly in the second half. They held the Ravens to just 3 points, that field goal as time expired in the second half of the game. I mean, that was pretty impressive alone.
Well, I thought it was a great game, and it kind of had a playoff atmosphere, and there will be more playoff atmospheres here to come for the 49ers, including real playoff football. And Laura, we'll talk a little bit more about what's coming up for the 49ers. But first, I want everybody to hear this conversation I had with Bryant Young, one of the all-time classiest guys who's ever put on a 49ers uniform, number 97. And now there's another 97 running around for the 49ers defense, Nick Bosa. But I hope you guys enjoy this conversation with Bryant Young. This is the 49ers Insider Podcast brought to you by Big O Tires, and a very special guest this week because he's a man who everybody in the Bay Area knows is one of the all-time greats and certainly a fantastic San Francisco 49er and somebody who, for the very first time, and it's long overdue, made it into the semifinalist round, the final 25 for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I am joined now by Bryant Young. Bryant, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, Matt, thanks for having me. It's an honor, man, to be a part of your show and all that you're doing here on this podcast.
I want to ask you, because I'm sure you had to be frustrated with the process. A lot of people who know you and who know what kind of person you are, know what kind of player you are, were very disappointed over the past 7 years or so that you never got any recognition when it came to Hall of Fame voting. So when you found out last week that you were in the top 25, what did you think of?
You know, I was very excited, you know, since the day or the year I became eligible, I was, you know, I was very thrilled. But, you know, that process goes on, and it's like, oh, will I ever, you know, get a chance to make it out of the first round? And so I was very excited that when I understood that I became, you know, one of 25 in the semifinals, just excited that finally, you know, there's a little bit of a breakthrough. And so I know there's a lot of ground to cover, and there's just one step closer to potentially being where, you know, I hope to have to made it at some point, dreamed about making it. And so I was very excited, you know, and it's an honor to be among, you know, one, the 122, and then the 25. It's a real big honor to be a part of that group.
You came to the 49ers as a first-round draft pick in 1994. By the time you retired in 2007, and you're one of those few players that retired on your own terms. But during your career, 89.5 sacks, all-time 49ers franchise record. You won a Super Bowl your first year in the league. What are you most proud about when you look back on your NFL career?
You know what? There's a lot of different moments. One was, you know, winning a Super Bowl, but there's a lot of other moments during my career that I'm very proud of. And one is, you know, the relationships, you know, that we're able to form over the course of my career. And but, you know, to be able to play for an organization for that long, 14 years, I was very proud of that moment. I mean, it's over time, but certainly it was, you know, something that don't happen often. And then, you know, in 98, when I broke my leg, you know, just overcoming a huge, just a bump in the road adversity, able to come back from that and play many years after that. You know, I was very, very excited to be able to do that. And just the hard work that it took to get back and play in that at a top form, it took a lot of work. You know, but I am proud of, you know, one, the support that I've got over the years, and that was through the fans. And, you know, they were motivating for me. It was always a thrill to be able to get up on Sunday to, one, play for my coaches, my organization, my teammates. But more importantly, the fans, they give so much to this game. And but to be able to be out in front of them and perform and give them what they, you know, hope that they're paying for. And so their support over the years has been, those have been some milestones and things that I'm really proud of.
You made a remarkable return from that broken leg. And it was pretty grotesque to watch. And I can't even imagine how it felt. Was there a point there where you thought that could be your career? And why were you so adamant about returning at that point? Because you had already had a really good career through that stage in your life.
Yeah, and I felt like I was still, you know, it happened, you know, toward the end of 98. And it was, I was really on the verge of having a really good season that year. And it's like, man, wow, like this is happening. But there was so much ahead of me. I was still, you know, young and hadn't, you know, really matured at my position. So there was much to be accomplished. And so just having the motivation and the fight and having that injury test me in terms of my love for the game, I wanted to come back and play. There was so much ahead of me that I couldn't just leave and walk away from the game and not having tried to overcome something that potentially could have, you know, put me in retirement for the rest of my life.
What was it like to come into the league and win a Super Bowl your very first year? You hear stories about guys who go there and they think this is the way it's going to be every year. Did you appreciate it at the time? And how do you look back on that 1994 season?
You know, I did appreciate it a whole lot. You know, one, to be able to go to an organization, especially where I was picked at the seventh pick, you know, it's unheard of that you go, you know, to a good place. And understanding that my job description was very important. And so they brought me in to do a job and play a role. And so I had the responsibility to do the best that I can to play my specific role and do my job, because I had to be accountable to one, the organization, to the coaches, to my teammates. And so, you know, you come in and you win it that way, and you're thinking that, man, it's, you know, this is going to be a good career. And you quickly find out that, you know, it's a battle to get back every year and to stay on top for many years. But certainly I'm really excited that I had a chance to play with some awesome guys, and that showed me a lot and formed some relationships over those over that season and over the years. But certainly I do appreciate having come very close in college. I know it's not the pros, but coming close to winning a national championship and being on the verge of winning it, and then coming in my first year and to finally be a part of something and to give so much to and to be a part of it, you know, it was like, man, it kind of paid off, but on a different level.
And now this word from Big O Tires.
Black Friday sale days at Big O Tires are back. Almost everything is discounted, including buy three, get one free on select in-stock tires with installation purchase. Plus, flexible options available with your Big O credit card. See participating Big O Tire store for all offer details. Ends December 8th.
We're back on the 49ers Insider Podcast with Bryant Young. I'm sure you watch the 49ers now, and after about a decade of your number 97 being out of commission for the 49ers, it's back out there now. And do you have any thoughts on seeing 97 wearing a 49er uniform these days, and that person is rookie Nick Bosa?
Yeah, you know what, it's kind of weird, you know, seeing it flash across the screen. But I tell you what, you know, he's representing that number really well and doing a good job in his first year. So, you know, proud of the job that he's doing with that number. But you know, it is what it is. It's not so much the number that makes the person, but it's the person that makes the number. And to be able to wear that number for so many years, I hope people remember the person more so than they remember the number and the person, what he did in the community, the person, how in terms of he treated people in the organization and the community, and then the person as a player. And so that's what's important. It's not so much the number, you know, I think people remember and they attach to people to a number, but the person should stand out more importantly than the number. You know, if you have that opportunity to play in a number for many years.
Yeah, what is it about the sport that you love so much? Because, you know, you got into coaching. What do you like about it? What about it continues to draw you in?
The coaching part of it, you know, it was, you know, sports has a way of just teaching you lessons about life, and you know, whether it's, you know, accountability, responsibility, ownership, discipline, focus, and then just working as something to achieve something that's bigger than yourself. So that was my big draw to football, and so to be a part of it, even after I played, I wanted to be able to, you know, continue to do that and to help develop young men to realize their dream, and to help, you know, in some way, not so much on the field, but also off the field. Like, there are so many lessons that can be learned in football that can, you know, go with you and you can carry on with you for the rest of your life as a person. So that was one of my draws. You know, I accumulated so much in terms of my, you know, knowledge and people that have touched my lives with different coaches that have come in. And so I just wanted to be able to, you know, continue that in some way and give back to the game. Of course, I like winning. I like competing and all those things. And to help somebody, you know, maximize their potential far beyond what they thought they could ever reach. You know, that was one of my goals as well as a coach.
Well, when you watch the 49ers now, do you watch that defensive line with coach's eyes or like a fan or like a former player? Where do your eyes go when you watch the 49ers on defense now?
I'm all over the place. I'm looking, I see it from a couple different perspectives, but I do watch with my coach's eyes. And so you see things and how they play, the chemistry that they have, and they understand, you know, situational football. You know, guys are competing from snap to whistle, and that's really fun to see. And then just in terms of situational football, what's needed and how you're going to play at certain points in the phase of the course of the game. And so I see it from that perspective. And then just from a fan perspective, it's just really fun to see for the fans, you know, that, you know, the Niners are doing a really good job and everybody's engaged and it's fun and you feel that excitement in the air. And so, you know, it's just fun. They're fun to watch. And then, you know, you understand that from a coaching standpoint, they got a good group of guys that have been assimilated on that field, that really care about each other and that play for each other.
Well, I was just so entertained watching that game on Sunday against the Baltimore Ravens, and I just thought that those were two really, really good teams going at it, and they just stood toe-to-toe and went at it. And I just thought that was a super fascinating game to watch. What did you see on Sunday?
You know what? I thought the same thing, Matt. I thought, you know, when you look at these teams, how they compare, you know, in their rankings, you know, first and the second on defense and offensively with the Baltimore Ravens and vice versa with the 49ers offense and their defense, it was a really good matchup. And there's one thing I learned years ago, that when you go on the road, there's two things that you have to have. You got to pack your defense and your special teams. And I thought, you know, it was one of those games that, because of the weather too, it wasn't going to be one of those games that were going to be aired out. It wasn't going to be a big passing game, but it was a game. It was a grinder. You know, it was a run game. But you saw, you know, just ball control and change of – not a whole lot was given up, but it was just, you know, kind of going back and forth. It was kind of one of those games that you when you look at the matchup and how they compared, you know, it's what you thought it would be in terms of how the game was won. I'd be determined by a field goal and kind of going back and forth, not giving up a whole lot. But it was just fun to watch, and it's unfortunate that the 49ers didn't win.
You know, Brian, you talked earlier about off the field and getting involved, and I know there's a charity that you're very active in and means a lot to you, and it really strikes home, and that's the Pediatric Brain Tumor Foundation. Can you tell us your involvement and the personal reason why this really strikes a chord with you?
Yeah, so in 2016, I became a member of the board, but when I started coaching again, I wasn't available as much. So my wife and I switched roles, and she became a board member. I became a special ambassador to the Pediatric Brain Tumor Foundation. And so basically, this is one of the leading cancer research fund. They generate and raise funds for pediatric brain tumor cancer research. And so because it's near and dear to us, you know, we lost our son in October of 2016. And this cause has become near and dear to our hearts, because you never want to see a kid, you know, suffering in that capacity. And then If they happen to go through treatment and survive, you know, these treatments are so tough on their bodies and they're never the same. And so we're just trying to help raise funds so that we can contribute to research to find better solutions and treatments, you know, for pediatric patients in this area. And so I'm just excited to be just a very, very small part of this cause and just to help, you know, care, cure, and thrive with the young people that are affected by this terrible disease.
Yeah, and I know your son, Bryant Colby Young, he got involved with this as he was battling cancer, and I know I'd read that he wanted to collect $2,000 to donate to the foundation, and he ended up raising more than 50,000.
Yes.
That had to be a pretty special time.
It was. In his sickness, it was a campaign that I think he had saw it done before, and it wasn't an original idea, but it was certainly, a heartfelt one by him to be able to, think about others. And we've always taught our kids about be other center and serve. And so in his battle, he thought of a way that, he can get the school behind a great cause. And so he wanted to, put out buckets in the school and collect change. And his goal was to collect, if it got $1,000, that was an accomplishment for him. He just did something great. But, it really caught fire. And so his $1,000 goal, it became $50,000+. And so he was very excited about that, to be able to give to the Pediatric Brain Tumor Foundation.
That is awesome. And so you now live in Charlotte, North Carolina with your family?
Yep. So I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina. I've been here since 2013. Unfortunate and fortunate, that where we are. But, I think at the time, with having gone through treatment with my son, it was kind of the best of both worlds in terms of being around really good care facilities. And then some of the secondary treatments that we were able to, get in, they were on the East Coast anyway. So it worked out in that favor.
All right. Well, Brian, well, thank you for sharing that with us. You were named an NFL All-Decade Team of the 1990s. I mentioned that you're in the top 25 as a semifinalist for the 2020 Pro Football Hall of Fame. But here's probably the biggest compliment on your resume as a football player. You were an 8-time Lynn Eshmont Award winner. And that says so much, because that is an honor that 49ers players vote for other 49er players. And, yes. And that just has to mean so much. And I believe there was one stretch where you won 4 years in a row. So that has to be great source of pride for you.
You know what it is? You asked me earlier, what was some of the things I'm most proud of? You know, Matt, it's that. And yeah. Sometimes I don't bring up, stuff that, I've been able to accomplish over the years, but, that award to me, it garners respect, from your teammates, because they see the work that you put in. They see the leadership and the sacrifice that you demonstrate. And so to be voted by my teammates, my peers, the ones that you go to battle with on Sundays, to receive that type of respect is really humbling. And so, to win it one time was, is an all, but to win it 8 times, I'm still pinching myself to say, how did I, win this award that many times when there are so many other awesome players during the course of my career and before me that, may have won it 1 or 2 times, and little old me won it 8 times. It's, I'm still pinching myself over that.
Yeah, just so people know, that this award goes to the player who best exemplifies the inspirational and courageous play of Lynn Eshmont. Lynn Eshmont was an original member of the 49ers in 1946.
Yes. And those things right there, I mean, what it stands for and all the things that you try and exemplify that award stands for, it's humbling to be recognized and people to see that you represent that in terms of that award. So I'm thrilled. I'm grateful to the people that I played with over the years, and I got a ton of respect for them as well.
All right. Well, Brian, hey, I really appreciate you spending some time with me on the 49ers Insider Podcast, and I wish you and your family nothing but the best.
Matt, thank you so much. God bless you.
Back on the 49ers Insider Podcast with Laura Britt, and yeah, that was fun to catch up with Brian Young. Got some good news last week. Finally cracked into the top 25 for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And Laura,
how excited was he about that?
Yeah, very excited, because he's one of these guys that for whatever reason kind of slipped through the cracks and doesn't get the recognition and the honors, I think, that he deserves. And you can tell why a little bit, I think, because he's such a soft-spoken guy, very humble. And a lot of times it's the greasy wheel that gets the...
The squeaky wheel, there Mayoko. The squeaky
wheel. I knew it was something like that. Squeaky wheel, greasy wheel. It's certainly not the greasy wheel that gets the squeak. It's the squeaky wheel that gets the grease. So thanks for setting me straight on that one, Laura.
Of course. That's what I'm here for.
Yes. And now we turn the page to New Orleans on Sunday. And now the 49ers head into this very important game on Sunday against the New Orleans Saints. 49ers have fallen out of the top spot mathematically, or, you know, as far as the NFL tiebreaker goes, because the Seahawks beat the Vikings on Monday night. And so, you know, obviously the 49ers and the Seahawks play again week 17. But right now, Seattle holds that top spot because they have the head-to-head win over the 49ers. So anyway, all that stuff with the division will be settled at a later date. But right now, the 49ers have to get focused in on the New Orleans Saints. And Laura, this is going to be another good one.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. And now that we know how the season is, you know, playing out, at the beginning of the season, we knew it was going to be difficult in this stretch, but you didn't know what their record was going to look like. Now that we know who this 49ers team is, these two games are just the most telling. We learned a lot about the 49ers against the Ravens, but it's going to be even more telling against the Saints. And I think this team has a really, really good shot at winning this game.
I do too. I thought that they would lose to the Ravens, I must admit, and I think they're going to beat the Saints. I think that they will be well rested. I am now speaking to you, Laura, from Florida, and the 49ers are in Florida in the Tampa area. Bradenton, Florida, and that's where the IMG Academy is. So they'll be practicing here. And if it's anything like that week in Youngstown earlier this season, they will be very tired early in the week. Their practices will be a little bit lighter, but come Sunday, they'll be ready to go. And they do have some injury issues, but not to the extent that they've had in the past. They're hoping to get Matt Breida back, Dee Ford back, and Joe Staley back. So that will be important, although I must say Daniel Brunskill at left tackle played very well against the Ravens. But the 49ers defense, I think, is going to be more of its standard look. They were kind of on edge a little bit, I guess, against the Baltimore Ravens. They couldn't just fly after the quarterback and rush the passer because of the running
nature.
Too
many variables.
Yeah, way too many variables. Well, I think it gets back to normal this week. Like, they'll be able to go after Drew Brees on Sunday.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they're going to. I mean, that is their game. Pressure is their game as far as the Niners defense goes. And Drew Brees is going to be tippy-toeing around back there, I have a feeling, if he's not if they're not sacking him too many times. So it's going to be – I just think it's going to be exciting, because every game, when you look at the games that they've played against really great quarterbacks, they have done a fantastic job. I mean, Russell Wilson, they were very much in that game, lose by that field goal in overtime. The game against the Ravens with Lamar Jackson – with Kyler Murray, similar situation, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees. I think those are the quarterbacks you think of when you think of great NFL quarterbacks. Kyler Murray, obviously, on the front end of that, is still having to prove himself. But I think it's going to be exciting to see how they hold up against the Saints team, because the Saints have clinched the NFC South. They did that when they played the Falcons on Thanksgiving Day. So there's just a lot on the line. I mean, the Saints are playing for something in this game. This is not just another game for them either. I mean, the Niners have the target on their back. When they were 10-1 heading into the Ravens, and now they're 10-2, they still very much have that target on their back. They are one of the best teams in football, and everybody wants to make a point and prove their worth by beating the 49ers.
Yeah, and New Orleans still has their sights set on the number one overall seed, home field advantage in the NFC playoffs. The 49ers certainly looking at the NFC West and, you know, their seeding in the NFC playoffs. And one aspect of this game that will definitely be worth watching, you know, when the Saints have the football, Drew Brees will be in the pocket. You know where to find him. He's going to be throwing the football around the field as much as they can. They do have a good running game. Obviously, Alvin Kamara is one of the best in the business, but boy, does Drew Brees feed the ball to wide receiver Michael Thomas. Already 110 catches, nearly 1,300 yards, 6 touchdowns. And the 49ers right now have a gimpy Richard Sherman.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, who may or may not play. But the 49ers feel good, I think, about just how they stack up, because we know Emmanuel Mosley can play. He did a good job filling in for Akella Witherspoon. Witherspoon has had a good season, too. So certainly the 49ers want Richard Sherman out there.
Well, and according to Richard Sherman, he will be.
Right, yeah.
If he has any say.
Yeah, and that's kind of where the training staff, the medical staff, and Coach Shanahan have to step in and say, you know what, you know, if you're not good enough to play, if you're not feeling well, if you can't move, if you can't protect yourself, we have to protect you from yourself. And so the 49ers have pretty good depth at cornerback. So I think they can get through the game, but this is the type of game where, you know, they're going to have, you know, big games from the guys on the outside, as well as Kaywan Williams, and the pass rush is going to have to get there. So, hey, it's just another challenge for the 49ers.
Yeah, and Jaquaski Tartt, we know Kyle Shanahan said that he ended up fracturing his ribs on Sunday against the Ravens. Then Richard Sherman had that knee injury. He's listed as day-to-day. DJ Jones got injured as well. I mean, from your experience covering the team and covering the NFL for so long, is it realistic to think that Jaquaski Tartt could play on Sunday?
Emmanuel Sanders, he didn't miss a game, and he had an injury, a fracture of the ribs area that kept him in pain, or he was in pain for several days leading up to that first game back after that injury. So it can be done. You know, I'm sure that he'll be wearing a jacket, protecting those ribs. And again, if he can't go, then it's Marcell Harris. And Marcell Harris came up with a big play.
What he was able to do.
It'll be difficult, I'm sure, for him to get out there, as it will be for Sherman. But they have a few days to figure this thing out. And I'm just certain that whoever is lining up for the 49ers on Sunday against the Saints, they're going to be ready to play. They're going to be prepared, and it's going to be another good one. And I mean, we're at the stage in the season where it just seems like every game the 49ers play is a good one, because the stakes have been increased. There's enthusiasm, and the Superdome will be rocking on Sunday.
Wait, before we go, the most important question of the week for you, Matt Maiocco: are your shoes dried out?
I don't know. I took them off as soon as I got back to the hotel in Baltimore.
And you left them?
No, I didn't leave them, but I just kind of had them aired out, and then I threw them in my luggage. And now that you mention that, I should probably take them out of my luggage and keep them aired out.
But yeah, you're going to need to wash all the things in that suitcase.
Yes, so that'll be I'll be doing laundry here very shortly in Florida.
All right, give us a pictured update on Twitter.
Of the shoes?
Once you know if your shoes are dried out.
Okay, I will do that. Hey, Laura, I will see you back in the Bay Area next week. And looking forward to talking to you this week on 49ers Central, as well as for the pregame show and the postgame show from New Orleans.
Sounds good.
Subscribe to the 49ers Insider Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And check out some of our previous episodes this season with DJ Jones, Jerry Rice, Richard Sherman, and many others. And please leave a rating and a review. Also, you can find other interesting podcasts on all Bay Area teams at NBCSportsBayArea.com/podcast.
The 49ers Insider Podcast on NBCSportsBayArea.com.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.